Welcome to Inside Jag Nation, a weekly podcast that gives you an in-depth look at the South Alabama Jaguars. You can find a new podcast uploaded weekly online at usajaguars.com or take the podcast with you on your smartphone by subscribing for free on iTunes. Just search South Alabama Jaguars.
Welcome to Inside Jag Nation, the weekly podcast of the University of South Alabama Department of Athletics. I am Associate Athletic Director for Strategic Communications, Brian Freeman, and our guest this week heading into the holiday season is men's assistant basketball coach Brock Morris. Coach, appreciate your taking the time with us today.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
As we head into the holidays and then the start of Sun Belt Conference play next week, y'all have one final road game prior to recording. You all are headed to Tulane on Thursday for a noon tip. In your assessment, where do you see that the team is at as you get ready for the start of league play?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, we've got a young team age-wise. We expected some growing pains early. You know, we have to learn basketball character. We've got to learn how to win. We've got to learn how to play together, how to be consistent with our effort and with the game plan, the discipline to execute. So we've seen all of that in the non-conference. We've lost a couple of games by a possession or two that were very close that easily, you know, could have won. We've also dominated teams. And I think it's good to see all of that. Obviously, you'd like to come out on the winning side on all of them. But going into Tulane, which is going to be one of our tougher competitions of the year, they're a top 115 RPI team. We've got a very good chance to win the game on the road, which would be a good win for us going into conference. But we've got to learn some of those basketball character lessons that we were taught earlier in the year.
When you go back and look at film and you're doing self-evaluations, what does this team do well when it is playing good, and what is an area of improvement that you are still kind of focusing on with this group as you approach the midway point of the year?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's pretty clear with this group. Coach Graves and I were talking about it this morning. Our identity is defensively. I mean, we're the number one team in the Sun Belt Conference right now defensively, okay? So we've got length, we've got speed, and we've got intelligence. We've got a little bit of grit and toughness that needs to continue to grow. That has to remain consistent. Some of the games we had early, we didn't play to our identity. We weren't consistent with that. Now we've got to improve offensively. I think that comes with chemistry. I think that comes with mental toughness to hit open shots. I think that also the biggest statistic there is turnovers. We're leading the Sun Belt Conference also in turnovers. So if we could get more opportunities with the ball at the rim, the percentages say, the law of averages say, that we will score more points. And we've got a defensive and offensive goal. Right now we're meeting our defensive goal. So we're achieving that. We've just got to become better and more consistent on the offensive end. And when that happens, you could see streaks of 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 wins and really compete for championships.
Yeah, and I know Coach Graves has talked about it. Post-game press conferences at various times over the last month plus, where I think part of it is just you got to figure out your rotation first. And yep. And it's been a lot of mixing and matching guys, and that makes chemistry difficult because you're in different spots with different guys all the time, and you're now just, I think, getting into some set, defined roles as you get to the midway point of the year.
Yeah, and I think when you have a young team that hasn't played together, when you lose 70% of your scoring and 70% of your minutes, you've got to kind of find that out a little bit on the fly. I mean, you have practice, you have preseason practice, but at the end of the day when the lights are on, the popcorn's popping, and the fans are there, that's when you find out who you have. You know, Roderick Sykes is a great example. Honestly, in the first part of practice, the month of training camp, he was just okay. He was what he started the season as a role player, sixth guy. As the lights came on, he really showed he could score the basketball. And Jordan Andrews has scored it well, too, but, you know, Roderick was more hot. So we went with Roderick. Then I think the other part of it is the game's changed. The game is changing from big men. You know, Rozelle Nix and Kevin Morris do some really good things, but sometimes their matchups are really difficult because they're playing 6'5", 6'6", 6'7", guards at the five, the other team is. So what we found is some success with Nick Davis sliding into the starting lineup. So I think the game's changed. I think you see a team that had not played together ever. As coaches, as players, we kind of had to find out what strengths and weaknesses are. And I agree with you. I think we're starting to evolve into understanding our roles, how to play within those roles. And also, I think guys are really competing daily to make sure they're in the rotation, which I think is healthy.
At this point, you know, what's your assessment of Sun Belt men's basketball? How closely during non-conference play are you guys keeping track of results from other schools?
Well, this is my sixth year in the Sun Belt. I spent three at Lafayette, and obviously it's my third here at South Alabama. And the conference has changed a lot since I've been in it. You know, I used to have Western Kentucky and Middle Tennessee and North Texas, FA and FIU. And, you know, I wasn't sure how the conference was going to be stronger with the addition and subtraction of some teams. And to be honest with you, Brian, it's gotten a lot better. Nationally, last year was the 13th ranked RPI conference in the country compared to, say, Conference USA, where some of those teams went, was 20th. You know, this year we got all the way up to the 11th ranked RPI conference in the country. So the strength of the conference is overwhelmingly better. We do keep track of those teams and what they do, obviously, because that ultimately is what we play for, is for regular season conference championship to guarantee a spot in the NIT, and then the tournament to guarantee a spot in the NCAA tournament. Now, the non-conference helps you get those at-large bids, which we're ultimately striving for. But yeah, we have very familiar eyes on conference opponents.
All right. I mean, not necessarily today, since school is officially closed for the next couple of weeks, but these last, you know, during the regular fall semester, on a weekday where you guys are home with no game, mm-hmm. describe a typical day and what your schedule is like, and how you divvy up some of your responsibilities that you have to handle in your role.
Yeah. Well, I can go personal, and then I can probably go our staff. I'm a big-time routine guy. I've kind of got set what I do every day. It's a 6 a.m. wake-up call. I try to read three or four articles, maybe a book here or there, do some research on other things. My son usually wakes up about 6:30. My wife and I will spend family time for about an hour. He loves to shoot basketball, play golf in the living room, whatever we're playing. About 7:30. 7:40, we're heading into the office. We usually get a staff workout in at 8, which I think is really good for staff chemistry and just the health of our profession. From there, we kind of break into our own routines. You know, for me, it's typically either breaking down film of the upcoming opponent or practice from a defensive standpoint. And then I get into recruiting around 10 o'clock for an hour and a half. Try to watch some recruiting film, make some recruiting calls, text messages. Usually have a lunch hour about 11:30, come back at 12:30. I coach our point guard, so they'll come into my office an hour before practice. We'll watch film, we'll talk, we'll teach, we'll learn. And then we go out to practice, say, from 2 to 4, you know, give or take. We'll practice, we'll come back in, we'll talk about practice, we'll break down the film. We'll leave the office about 5:30 or so. Head home, eat some dinner, spend a little time with your family. About 9 o'clock, you go back into the office. For me, I go home from about 9 to midnight every night. And that's where you do recruiting calls, scouts, practice film, and you kind of get ready for the next day.
So you actually do things twice, two different times. It's a little bit repetitive. Interesting. Yep. What's your game day routine?
Yeah, game day is interesting. You know, you try to be mentally sharp. You know, there's a lot of sleep doctors out there that say, and this is for the athletes and for the coaches, you really have got about an 8-hour day. It's kind of why we go 8 to 5. That's why farmers work 6 to 4, 6 to 3. It's really hard to stay mentally sharp for over 8 to 10 hours. So in the morning times, I try to personally spend time with my family. We get into the office. We may get a staff workout in again. Then you start watching a little film, make sure there's any last-minute adjustments that you need to see, tendencies. We do a lot of heavy percentages, what they run out of timeouts, baseline out of bounds, you know, under 5 seconds on the shot clock, 5 seconds in a game. Just all these scenarios that we must know going into a game. Work with our guys, maybe watching film, getting shots up. We have a little shoot around 5 hours before the game. We have pregame meal 4 hours before the game. You know, I go home, take a shower, get ready, come back hour and a half before the game, and we're rolling. And so you're really trying to keep yourself mentally sharp for your players to give them the best chance to be successful on game day.
You know, I think if I understand it right, it's the way Coach Graves has it set up is not that one assistant does only one. You all have your hands on multiple areas of responsibility. So,
right.
You know, you talked about it, that primarily you're looking at recruiting and game prep scouting. There are any other areas that you think that you do a lot of day-to-day stuff that people might not recognize or understand that you have to handle those?
Yeah, psychology. we often joke we have a doctorate in psychology. The most important thing in any organization, you know, not just sports team, is people. You can have the best policies, the best procedures, the best game plan, but if your people don't believe they can be highly effective and successful, I just don't think it's going to work. So what we spend a lot of time, and this is probably what gets lost on the general public, is we try to take each individual player or person in our organization and help them be the most successful they can be in life. A lot of times that's academically. A lot of times that's socially. Could be spiritually. And obviously it's athletically. I think that's probably what goes under the radar the most.
Tell us, because you are very involved in it, and you know, to look at your bio, you list some of the younger guys on the roster that you played a key role in their recruitment here, guys like Jordan Andrews and Herb McGee. You know, it's a lot of the guys. What's your approach to recruiting? What are you looking for when you're watching tape? And then when you get to the times where you can evaluate in person, what do you want to see?
Yeah, I know that's a great question. I get that question a lot from people across the country. And basically, I believe you must recruit to your head coach and your institution. We must all be aligned, from the president to the athletic director to the head coach to the assistant coaches to the players. There has to be alignment. There's several different ways to perform, to do things, but if we don't get guys who fit at South Alabama, who has a very good academic base, you know, it's a little more difficult sometimes in certain majors, which I think is great. If we don't get someone who fits Coach Graves' personality, who, you know, needs somebody who's going to talk to them, coach them, who they need to be self-motivated, okay, Coach Graves does better with those kind of guys, the guys that really desire to be in the gym. So I think in recruiting, you first need to know who you're recruiting for. Then you go out and you try to identify, obviously, talented players who fit that model. And then for me personally, it's winners. I want winners. You know, we've got 15 state championship appearances on this team now. And Herb McGee and Jordan Andrews won 3 in a row together. And they played, or Herb played in 6 state championships, 5 in basketball and 1 in football. Joe Thompson played in state championship game last year. You know, John Petway went to the Final Four in Alabama. So you've got guys who know how to win. They've won. I think that's critical. And then probably the most important thing, I think, is character. You're just not going to be successful in life without character. So if you don't have a desire and ambition to be successful, to do the right things when nobody's watching, you're going to have a hard time being successful. So that's kind of how we wrap it up.
You know, as you continue in your career in this profession, you know, is there an area that you look at that you want to personally develop in or strengthen your background in as you move along? And, well, I'll ask you specifically later, but I imagine at some point you're going to be beyond assistant coach. You know, what are you looking at that you think that you're improving?
Yeah, I think we're all improving daily in every area. Yes, I would love to be a head coach one day. I think that's all of us. We strive for the pinnacle at our profession. I think that a lot of those experiences when you're in the head coaching chair is you are overseeing everything. I think you have to coach your coaches. I think you have to coach your players. I think you've got to set a standard and a vision. And you've got to know those things before you can set those for everyone. I think there's accountability and there's love and there's all these things that go into being a head coach that's much more different than being an assistant coach when you're more of a worker ant. You just kind of do your job. So my job as an assistant is to constantly watch Coach Graves, learn from Coach Graves. You know, I've worked for 6 different head coaches. I've learned from different ways to do things. I have now up to 125, I think it is, notebooks at my house that are filled with thoughts. And I think that is where I've got to continually learn is who do I want to be if I'm ever given that opportunity and what do I want the program to look like. And I think when you have a clear vision, it's very easy or easier to set that clear vision for everyone else.
If there's one thing that you could tell young individuals who are aspiring to enter the coaching profession that would help them prepare to coach at the collegiate level, what would it be?
Persistence and be Columbus. Good buddy of mine, Drew Powell, actually the head coach at Spanish Fort. We worked together at Alabama, and I had an opportunity to take a job that I was unsure of. It was actually for less money, and it was moving out of my comfort zone one time. And he and I were on the phone like you do with good friends. He said a line to me that's always stuck, and I've told people this forever. He said, Columbus took a chance and discovered America. And I think as a young coach, you've got to be willing to take a chance, and it cannot be about money. It's got to be about what you want to do. And if you take a chance and you meet as many people as you can, you network, you get outside your comfort zone, maybe develop a recruiting area that you didn't think you would, and learn. Okay, I can't tell you how many clinics I go to, and I read books, and I read articles, and I watch videos, and I don't think that ever stops. But if you're a young coach and you want to get in this, can't know enough people, you better take a chance, and you better continually learn.
Visiting this week on Inside Jag Nation with assistant men's basketball coach Brock Morris, in your third season here with the program, but you have roots in the state. You're originally from Albertville. I've been in Alabama approximately 10 years, and I've come to find that it's kind of a football-first state.
Yeah.
So that leads me to ask you, where's the interest in basketball come from?
You know, it's funny. I tell people all the time, football might be my favorite sport. I'm actually glad that I coach basketball so I can watch football as a fan. I grew up in Albertville, Alabama, which I'm very proud of, 20,000 people and passionate, rabid fan base for their high school athletics. I played football in high school, played basketball in high school, played baseball, ran track, did all the sports. Was fortunate enough to have some success probably at a young age, get on a national AAU team, play with some really, really good players, and just really fell in love with the fact that I could go shoot basketball in my driveway by myself. I could get better at something by myself. You know, football, you had to have somebody catch it on the other end or throw it to you. Same thing with baseball. So that's probably where my passion originally developed.
You did take your career beyond high school. You played for a couple years at Snead State Community College. At that point, were you still thinking Division I scholarship or at least a four-year scholarship? Or was it more about the opportunity just to keep the education going as you figured out what your path has turned into?
Yeah, you know, I've got a unique story. My senior year in high school, I blew my ACL out twice. September 19th, 2003, playing a high school football game. Coach Pruitt, who's now the head coach at Tennessee, was the opposing defense coordinator, side story there, but blew my knee out. All my recruitment, all my scholarships went away. Basketball and football. So went to see Dr. Andrews and some of his people and came back in 2.5 months from full ACL surgery. I was fully cleared, but I played 3 minutes and 1 second and tore it again, the same knee. So that effectively kind of ended my pursuit of Division I scholarships. I loved the game, wanted to play, had the opportunity to play on scholarship at Snead. So I went, stayed 2 years. And to be honest with you, just never was the same player. I was probably already maxing out my speed anyways and my ability. So with a bum wheel, it just wasn't there. And to be frank with you, I probably lost my passion. Just realized I wasn't as good, and I needed to step away from the game because I don't know that I would be here today if I hadn't done that after 2 years.
Now, was there a point as you were kind of making that admission to yourself mm-hmm. that you started thinking that a career in coaching would be a good path for you? Or did you think that younger that, like, I'm going to play as long as I can, and when I get done, I'm going to be a coach because I just love it?
Yeah, no, you know, it's funny. I was never going to coach. I was going to go to law school. I wanted to – Matlock was my favorite show growing up. All right. Now, I had three channels. You can understand where I grew up now. I had three channels, okay? So it was either Matlock, Diagnosis, Murder, or a soap opera, all right? So So I went outside and played during the soap operas, and the only TV I got was Matlock. But I wanted to be a lawyer, and so that was kind of my idea. When I was done playing, I said, hey, this isn't for me. Went to Alabama, just became a regular student. And lo and behold, I knew some of the coaching staff at Alabama because they had recruited some of my AAU teammates. So Coach Godfrey and Coach Pearson, and they said, hey, why don't you try coaching? So why don't you go be a student assistant your senior year and basically be the bottom of the totem pole and do everything? So I did that, and then I graduated. I got into law school, was accepted, and they said, well, why don't you try being a GA? Okay, why not? You know, and here we are 10 years later. It's just kind of happened.
Can you still go back to – did you defer it? Can you still go back if you find you need to?
I give Coach Godfrey a hard time because he's the one that ultimately talked me into being his graduate assistant. And he said, hey, the LSAT's good for 5 years. Well, he didn't tell me I was going to stay here for 10, so now it's not – I got to go take that test again if I ever wanted to go back.
So it's really interesting because, I mean, like, I guess – without really thinking that that was the path you're going to follow, I mean, how do you prepare for that? Yeah. You don't. It's almost like you had to learn on the fly, but you kind of had some good people to do it because, you know, you're in the SEC at that point, so you're at a pretty high level.
Yeah, you know, it's like the advice to young coaches, or I think anybody, is you can have a plan, and you can work towards that plan, but you've got to be willing to adjust when life throws you another plan. And that's kind of what happened to me. I was pretty set. I was going to law school. I was pretty excited. Wasn't sure I wanted to be a trial lawyer or what kind, but life gave me an opportunity that a lot of people would have wanted. And after careful thought and prayer and thinking about what I could do with this, I just didn't feel like it was an opportunity I could turn down. Goes back to Columbus again. You got to take a chance. And I took a chance and just worked every day and have been really blessed and fortunate to meet some really good people. And that's kind of how it happened.
All right. So for the record, your undergraduate degree is officially in history, which makes sense along the law path.
Yep.
You did 2 years at Alabama as a graduate assistant. And in 2010, you got your master's. I just feel compelled to ask what human environmental sciences is, well, because that's what you got it in.
Yeah, it's a fancy word or less fancy word. I'm not sure how you would say it for sports management. That's how Alabama kind of cloaked their sports management program. I joke with Dr. Wright, the guy that was over it all the time, hey, can we just change this? Sports management sounds a lot better. But that was actually a great experience. People, you know, I would recommend that program. I got to go to Dallas, Texas and visit Jerry's World before it opened, and there was 8 of us, and we got to give suggestions on things they would change, and we got to go to the Olympic Training Center and learn how to sell tickets. A lot of things in athletic departments that as a coach you may not really touch, but I got to see the insides of that through those 2 years in sports management. It was a really neat experience.
So as you finished up your GA, you know, your first full-time job was as the director of ops at Louisiana Lafayette, which you touched on before, but was that one of those – that was kind of the recommended path to full-time assistant job? Or how did you end up in that role and at that school?
Yeah, and that's another story of taking a chance. I had at that time, Coach Godfrey had moved on from Alabama, and a guy named Anthony Grant had come in, which you hate to see coaches change. It really wrecks families. But as a young coach, it probably was a blessing in disguise to some degree for me because I was able to meet a whole new staff and learn maybe another way to do things. Well, when I was finished with my GA job, Bob Marlin had been at Alabama as an assistant, and then Darby Rich, who's his assistant now at Texas A&M, played at Alabama. Well, they needed operations guy, so they called me. I went down there and interviewed, and they offered me the job, and Coach Grant called me and said, hey, don't take it. So, Okay, so I drive all the way back to Tuscaloosa, and he offers me a job paying about three times the money. And he and I were going to work closely together, and I was going to work with some other things. And both of them were administrative roles. They both probably had a lot to do with basketball. I've been really blessed so far to kind of get a reputation in basketball. And so I actually took the job at Alabama. I worked 6 days, and Coach Grant and I finally sat down, and I said, Coach, I just feel like I'm selling myself short if I don't take this chance outside of my comfort zone. And this is when my buddy gave me the advice of, you know, Columbus took a chance and discovered America. So I was going to leave the SEC making a lot more money to go to a job in the Sun Belt Conference that I was the first director of operations they'd ever had in any sport, and kind of define a role. And it was scary. I'd never been to Louisiana to stay longer than, you know, a couple of days. But it was exhilarating at the same time because I took a chance and kind of took a, you know, bet on myself a little bit, and it's been a great opportunity since.
Yeah, well, you know, the journey description certainly fits to the next piece of the puzzle because after 3 years there, you ended up becoming a full-time assistant coach at the College of Southern Idaho. So how does one who's always been in the Southeast find a connection to end up out in the West like that? And what was it like living in Idaho after growing up and always being in this area?
Different would be the first word. No, it's once again, it's an interesting story, and it's a story of chance. I was working at Lafayette, had no inclination to leave, was not looking to leave. I was always open to listening to opportunities. I'd had several opportunities to listen to, just didn't quite fit what I was maybe looking for. In my role at Lafayette, I was really happy. I was on track to become a full-time assistant there, no issues. And a guy named Jeremy Cox, who had been the associate coach at Kentucky, called me one day, and he knew he'd come to Lafayette and seen me work a little bit, and he said, I'm going to take the head job at the number one junior college in America. And I said, I'm not going to junior college. I've turned down Division I assistant jobs. I'm not going to junior college. He said, well, you might want to think about this. He said, you're going to be able to, I'm going to allow you to recruit the country in the world, internationally and in the entire country, and we're going to win big. And Amanda, my wife now, who's my girlfriend at the time, told me, she said, hey, bet on yourself. Take a chance. So we did it. And to be honest with you, I thought I was going to Iowa at first. I had to look up Idaho. It ended up being a 30-hour drive, just her and I. And we get out there to Twin Falls, Idaho, which is a beautiful place, 20,000 people. And there's nothing an hour and a half each way. Boise is the closest thing an hour and a half. And they love basketball. They've sold out every game for 20 years. And all of a sudden, I was on planes every weekend. My wife, we've been there 6 hours, and I jump in a car and I drive to California and just recruit an area I'd never recruited before. And she's sitting at home on an air mattress. We didn't even have electricity, or we had electricity. We didn't have power or cable, any of that stuff. And she just read a book. You know, that was kind of what we did together. And I just recruited and recruited and recruited. And I learned from two really good coaches. Coach Cox actually left after a year and went to Southern Miss. And I was there with another guy named Jared Fay. And we ended up winning 58 games in 2 years, and we're in the top five in the country for 19 straight weeks. We were the number one defense in the country for 2 years. And we recruited guys from 12 different states in five different countries. And it was the most amazing thing for me to develop as a young coach, recruiting connections. I mean, I can call anybody in any state, in any country, basically, and get to a player. And it was truly a chance, but it worked out great.
So now, you know, now that you're back at, I mean, you were at Division I and you could see what coaches were doing. We're just going to officially say you did know coaching because you're not supposed to in the director of ops role.
Yep.
But now you're also full-time assistant here. What if any differences do you face? I mean, I'm sure budget's the main one, but what were the biggest differences you saw once you got to the junior college level and how things operate at Division I?
Yeah, you know what? In Southern Idaho is a unique place because the budget's on par with over half of the Division I program. So we had three full-time assistants, and I flew everywhere because you're in Idaho, so you can't really drive. Yeah. California's the only place you could probably drive to. So from the budget standpoint, it wasn't as much of a shock. The biggest thing was you kind of – you could get really good players. We had a kid that visited, on official visit, Kansas, Oregon, Indiana, Michigan State, and Southern Idaho, and we got him. So you could get those kind of guys. I think coming back to the Sun Belt, the reality is you've got to go turn over a lot of rocks, and you've got to be able to project guys kind of like we did at Lafayette with a couple of players who turned out to be pros. You probably are going to have a harder time until you win big beating Kansas on a player, even though we've had a couple of kids on visits here that had offers from Kansas. So we're getting there. But that was probably the biggest adjustment, was going back to the mid-major level and understanding that recruitment and not just going after the top 20 players that maybe weren't going to qualify or were in a different situation.
Yeah. What ended up attracting you to South Alabama when that assistant position became open?
Two things, Matthew Graves and it's home. Absolutely, no question about it, I wanted to work for Matthew Graves if given the opportunity. Obviously, his pedigree at Butler, they had won a lot. I love winning. I really loved winning after leaving Southern Idaho, but we'd done it at Alabama. You know, we had changed the culture and going to the NCAA tournament, going to Lafayette. I have a ring at my house. The fourth year, the year after I left, they went to the NCAA tournament, but we built that thing from scratch. And I felt like Coach Graves knew what winning looked like. And that's what I wanted. That's what I was chasing. It wasn't money. It wasn't anything. It was winning. And I knew by talking to him, this guy knows basketball. And I knew he was going to build it the right way, too. He wasn't into a quick fix. He was into high school guys primarily, the junior college here and there, but high-character guys, exactly what we described, how you need to recruit to win big. And I still believe in him to this day. People don't understand how good he is. And he's willing to build it slow, and he's willing to build it to where it can be sustained for a long time. And then, obviously, it was home. My wife's family lives in Destin, 2 hours from here. My family's 5 hours from here. So, you know, being back in the state of Alabama, being in the Gulf Coast region, was very important for us.
What do you enjoy most about coaching?
You know what? I believe my purpose in life is to help 18 to 22-year-olds grow from boys to men. That's every single day I wake up. Basketball is just the vessel that we use to get there. I remember when I was 18 to 22, I told you about some of the struggles I went through when my game wasn't there and I didn't know what I was going to do with my life. And having someone there that can be a mentor to help you bridge that gap, which could be the scariest time of your life, when you have to go into the real world and you've got to take care of yourself and then you got to take care of a family and learning who you are, that's my favorite part of coaching. I love the guys now that I can see that are 30 years old and they've got a family and they've got a job and they're being successful and they come back to some of the lessons or some of the things we read or watched in our meetings. Basketball, yes, is fun. I love winning, but I love the fact of affecting those young men's lives.
There was one task that you could just pawn off on somebody else as your duties as a coach, what would it be?
Oh, that's a great question. I've done everything in a program. Literally, I've been at the bottom. I've done everything in a program. You know, film exchange gets tedious. I don't have to do that much anymore. There's nothing that I would just give away. You know, sometimes you got to put on a smile for certain guys that want to be recruited that maybe you're not into it. You know, maybe they take those phone calls. I don't know. There's really nothing bad about it, to be honest.
No, you know, we talked about it before. You know, head coaching position is something that fits into a long-term track in the profession. Mm-hmm. But, you know, to delve into that more deeply, do you think you always want to stay at the collegiate level? Are you okay dropping a division to make that happen? Do you have any interest in professional basketball? How do you see that fitting into the picture in your long-term goals?
Yeah, you know, I think that it is about fit. It's about being able to impact young men's lives and winning. I think that, you know, for me, I would love to be a head coach one day. I want to win big, and I want to affect young men with winning. And so I think that it's not as much about levels, although I do like being at the Division I level. You know, professional basketball is completely different. I think I would enjoy the X and O's part of it. I think the personnel part might be challenging. I do enjoy the Division I level. Picking guys that maybe you fit with personality-wise and that you can impact their lives, and then the opportunity to take a community and win big. I mean, it's like Mobile. If we can get this thing rolling, we can compete for national championships, we can compete deep in the NCAA tournament, I think it gives it a source of pride for Mobile. It's their team. It's somewhere they can go on a Tuesday night and still get home. You know, they don't have to drive a few hours to go see somebody or watch them on TV. They can support this and feel proud of the national brand. So that's what I love about Division I athletics.
Guest this week on Inside Jag Nation has been Brock Morris, assistant men's basketball coach. Appreciate the time. We know as we record this that you are still heading into your last game before the break. But before we let you go, just to get to know you better outside of basketball, I'm going to ask you some questions. Looking for the first thing that comes to your mind or first answer that you think of, and we'll start with, in the limited amount of free time that you have, what's your favorite thing to do?
No question, hang out with my son and my wife. I mean, that is absolutely my favorite thing on earth. You know, he's 1.5 years old, and I never in 1,000,000 years knew how much fun it would be to help, you know, just raise him and watch him grow.
Favorite sport outside of basketball?
College football. And golf. You know, I like those two sports.
We're not going to advertise that we make a pretty good golf team when you take the clubs out of my hands.
You're a great caddy.
But we'll admit, but we can't admit that. What's the best athletic event you've ever attended as a fan?
Oh, my goodness. The Olympics were nice in 96. I'll never forget that. There was a few college football games that I attended that were really nice. And I actually enjoyed a New Orleans Saints. The only NFL game I've ever been to was a New Orleans Saints game, and it was very, very interesting.
If there's one athletic event you've never been to, you need to get to it. What's at the top of your bucket list?
I think running with the Bulls would be fun. I would love to go to the Masters, though. I think that's the top of my bucket list, no question.
What's favorite place you've ever gone on vacation to?
Oh, my goodness. Maui, probably. Went to the Maui Invitational, and then my honeymoon was again in Maui, so it's a pretty good spot.
If you're going to one place that you've never been to on vacation, what's the first place you're choosing?
Australia, no question.
Favorite movie?
Used to be Shawshank Redemption. Probably still is.
Favorite book?
Oh, I've got a lot of those. You know, There's an Urban Meyer book, Above the Line, that I think is really good. That's probably the latest one that I read. I really enjoyed that. And then, you know, there's several fictional books that I like, but Good to Great's a nonfiction book that I think is really good.
Favorite musical artist?
Probably Garth Brooks.
And as your career develops, this intriguing path of through basketball from Albertville, Alabama, to an eventual head coaching position and beyond. Hollywood producers comes up with a script, wants to make it a movie. What actor is going to play the lead role?
Oh, my goodness. I am not good in entertainment, so I would be lying to you if I told you I had any idea. Golly, I have absolutely no idea who. I'd like for Tom Hanks. That'd be fun, I guess. I enjoy watching him, but he's probably too big time for me.
Guest this week on Inside Jag Nation has been Brock Morris with the men's basketball program. Appreciate the time, and at the time that we air this for the public, we'll be heading into the holiday weekend, and enjoy that and the little break before we get into Sunbelt Conference play.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Inside Jag Nation is a production of South Alabama Athletics. Any rebroadcast or distribution of this podcast without the express written consent of South Alabama Athletics is strictly prohibited. Remember, you can find a new episode of Inside Jag Nation every week on USAJaguars.com or have them automatically uploaded to your smartphone by subscribing for free on iTunes. Keep up to date with the Jags by following us on Twitter with @USAJaguarSports and @JagNationUSA. Thanks for listening, and go Jags!